Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly program looking at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. This week we'll be hearing from Uber about their new option that hopes to tackle guide dog refusals in their ride-sharing service. Jackie Brown talks us through what the DotPad X multi-line braille display can do, and we'll have the second part of the Orbit Player demos. That's all coming up this week. So we'd recorded a bit in advance ahead of the Christmas period, but we're all back after Christmas. Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran all back with us. I'm sure there's a lot to catch up on. Hubert, what's new? Anything you got for Christmas or just anything in general that's new?
I didn't get anything over Christmas, but what I did do, because, you know, you'll get plenty of time over the Christmas break to do all sorts of things that you maybe don't get to do that often. I've discovered, well, not discovered, but gotten into the dangerous wormhole that is AI music making. I've gotten into Suno and I've been making various random songs over the festive period, trying to kind of, well, A, learn how it works, but B, just kind of find out what you can push it to. So, yes, I've been trying out the Suno app. Accessibility of it is a bit variable, I'm not going to lie. You know, for the basics of it, it allowed me to input text prompts as to what songs I want, which included a Roman-style times version of a song about Caesar the guide dog, obviously being the name Caesar. I thought that would be kind of ideal, although the AI didn't really grab the concept of how guide dogs work, because apparently Caesar guides me by grabbing me in his mouth, which doesn't obviously happen. So it was a bit strange.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the rest of the song was kind of the Roman times element was matched very well, and the vocals were chosen very good. So, it was quite interesting to kind of give it a try. I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I used to do songwriting a very long time ago in terms of lyrics. So, I don't know, maybe I could try write my own and then see what AI can do about it. But I found that quite fascinating for me. So that's going to be my Christmas thing. Late to the party on this, probably, compared to some people. But, it's quite an interesting one. It's easy to get lost in it until Suno tells you you've run out of credits for the day.
Jackie, anything with you over Christmas?
Not so much over Christmas. Had a very quiet Christmas, which was nice. But I have heard this week that a new Daisy player has dropped. It is called the Evo. That's E-V-O S10. I believe the Android is under the hood, and it really is a competitor, I think, to the Orbit Player in terms of price anyway. This one is it's available now, and it is going to cost £249 if you want to buy it, the same as the Orbit Player is. I believe it's kind of the same size, roughly. It has the vocalizer speech on it, so the text to speech are the vocalizer voices, of which there are several. I think it does all the usual things. I haven't seen it, but if anything like the previous versions of Evo are to go by, then, you know, there is the usual MP3, audiobooks, Daisy. You can read. Evo players are really renowned for very good PDF conversion. So if you've got a horrible PDF file that you have difficulty reading, you could open it on the Evo family of players and they read very well. So it's nothing that we haven't heard already on a bespoke Daisy player. So we'll just have to watch this space to see how it goes. But that's my contribution this week. You can buy this player either from Aspire Consultancy, which is Graham Longley, or you can get it from Computer Room Services, which is Steve Nutt. And as I say, it's priced at 249 if you are VAT exempt.
This is a brand that I've not really heard of, these players, to be honest, the Evo range. But it's nice to have the options, I think, and it's nice to see these becoming more affordable, because I can't remember, I know the price of the Victor Reader and the Sense player, which seem to be the two premium ones, yeah. And I feel like sometimes, I mean, something that I'm finding with the Orbit, and we're going to talk a bit more about this in a later episode as I kind of wrap up that review, you know, it's the sort of thing where sometimes you just want an offline, you know, separate podcast player, in my case, because I'm not much of a reader, but sometimes you just want that for whatever reason, but you might not want to spend fairly close to a smartphone again, if you've got one, just for that purpose. So yeah, one to look into there if you're interested.
The only issue that I have with all the Evo players, and they are nice players, they do have good sound, they do have good speakers, but my gripe with them is that the developers do not update the software very often. So I don't rate the podcast or internet radio providers that they use. I think they use VTuner. Now, it's a while since I've seen an Evo player, so possibly the updates are better now than what they were, but certainly they don't update their software very much at all. So that's something to watch, but hopefully, you know, people will you know, have an option to choose the Evo over the Orbit or any of the other players. I mean, it's good, as you say, to have choice. But that's all I know so far.
Natalie, anything new with you this week?
So I have been working my way through the Marvel movies because I've missed them as they've come out at various points due to audio description availability, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I've been working through them on Disney Plus, and I've gotten to the second Spider-Man movie. And the Spider-Man movies, for some reason, aren't on Disney at all. And I thought, that's fine, because I discovered it on Amazon Prime. And the reason I discovered it on Amazon Prime in the first place was actually earlier on in the series, I've been going to watch The Hulk. And The Hulk is on Disney Plus, but it's not audio described. But I found it on Amazon Prime with audio description. So I thought, okay, I'll try there. And I managed to watch the first Spider-Man with audio description on Amazon Prime, no problem. I went to rent the second one and I thought, hang on a minute, I'm not sure this has audio description. And I double checked, and number one does, and number three does, but number two doesn't. And I found that suitably frustrating. Hubert mentioned a few minutes ago about IMDb, so I checked the IMDb app, where that can tell you which platforms have these movies on them. And unfortunately, Prime was the only one that came up. So I thought, that's me scuppered, because trying to watch these kind of action movies, I would never attempt it without audio description or somebody there willing to tell me. So for good measure, I tried Netflix, didn't get anywhere, was feeling suitably frustrated. And I thought, I'll have one more go and I'll check Apple TV. Now, I don't have Apple TV, but I just thought I might be able to buy it or rent it from the iTunes store. So I searched for it and it came up. But not only did it come up for me to pay, it actually came up saying open in BBC iPlayer. So Apple TV pointed me to a free service that had it on there. And I went to BBC iPlayer. It was there and with audio description. So I saved myself £3.50 and a lot of headache and thoroughly enjoyed Spider-Man Far From Home.
Well, to be fair, as someone who's from Yorkshire, you know, £3.50 might not sound like a lot, but I'm sold on that one. Any saving, you know.
It's the principle of it. I resent paying for these services when they then put up programs or systems that we can't use. So for a number of months now, I've not been able to get onto Netflix because my TV app is behaving inconsistently, but more negatively than positively, where the voice control on my Samsung just stops working on it. And it's just the unfairness of it.
Well, I want to give a quick mention to the AppleVis Golden Apple Awards. This is something they put out every year towards the end of the year, just to recognise apps and developers that have made a commitment to accessibility in the past year. So they have four categories: best app, best game, developer of the year, and the fairly recent one that they introduced a couple of years ago was the David Goodwin Award. That's named after the founder of AppleVis, and that recognises a developer or a company that have really, not just over the past year, but over the past several years, I think it's a minimum of 3 years, have just demonstrated that accessibility commitment and even gone above and beyond to make their apps accessible and interact with the community and listen to feedback and all that good stuff. Both Best App and Developer of the Year was Pikibot. So this is the app that describes photos and videos, which has been massively popular, and I know there's a lot of work gone on there. The best game was Adventure to Fate series, so the core quest and dungeons. And the David Goodwin Award was for Aira. So it's nice to see these, I say this all the time, but it's nice to see these recognised, and especially on somewhere like AppleVis, which is such a big community. And all these nominations were decided by the users as well. So it's really nice to see that.
It's good to hear about things like that. It is good to hear positive stuff, isn't it? And it's also actually quite a good place if people are looking for good apps. If a bit like us, you get to the point where you're just frustrated of everything you try not working, to actually go somewhere it says if it's been nominated for an award, that's probably a good starting point.
So, congratulations to all of those winners. Well, we're back for the new year. So, a week of normal service resuming again. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Now, I've mentioned this quite a few times on RNIB Tech Talk when Uber introduced this feature. And this is, well, we'll find out more about this in a minute, but it's a feature to allow you to indicate that you have a service slash assistance animal. But what is it exactly and how it works? We are about to find out, as joining me is Uber's general manager in the UK, Andrew Brehm. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Hi, very nice to join you on the program, Hubert.
So let's just start at the top. What is this new Uber feature, and why was it introduced now? Why was it important to introduce it at this point?
What the feature does is it allows anyone with an assistance dog to register that within the app. Once you've done that, what it means is that a driver that you've requested for a trip on Uber, a private hire driver, he or she will be notified just as they're about to come to the pickup location that you do indeed have an assistance dog with you. And in that notification, it will also remind drivers of their requirement, which, as I'm sure you know very well, is a legal requirement, to take a passenger with their assistance dog, no questions asked, and no additional cost for that. And we hope that this feature will help smooth the way for passengers who have got assistance dogs with them. If you've got the Uber app, you'll know that in the bottom right there's an account button to tap. Then within that there's settings and then accessibility. And then within accessibility, there are a number of different accessibility areas that you can use to, I guess, self-register. And obviously, the most important one for your question right now is the assistance dog one. When you tap on assistance dog, you will be just asked whether your assistance dog is an animal that is an assistance dog as defined under the Equality Act 2010. Yes or no? Super simple. And then if you tap on yes, which presumably you would do, you then are asked whether you'd like to select, I will ride with my assistance dog. And then so if you've said, yes, I've got an assistance dog and I will ride with it, that's when the app will then notify drivers that you have an assistance dog, and they'll be notified just as they're coming to the pickup point. And that's how you switch it on, and it's just as easy to switch it off if for whatever reason you don't want to self-declare within the app. I mean, incidentally, within that accessibility area within Uber, you can also notify that you have difficulties hearing, or difficulties with vision as well. So there are a number of different areas that you can, within accessibility, self-declare, basically, which we hope, again, across all of those dimensions, will make it easier for people who have accessibility attributes to travel using the Uber app.
And once that feature is turned on, will it always be displayed on the user's profile until they switch it off, or do they have to, you know, enable that every time they book a trip?
No, it's on there until you switch it off. I mean, when you say displayed, it's not really sort of displayed anywhere. It's logged within the app. The only time that it displays is when if you do have it activated, when a driver is just arriving at the pickup point. And that's where it also is sort of interesting. So as they arrive, the driver is reminded of their obligations. Well, they're notified that the passenger they're about to collect has got an assistance dog, but they are reminded of their obligations. Obviously, it's part of a requirement to drive on the Uber platform, but it is also the law, as I'm sure you know very well. And so that's there. If by any chance a driver cancels a trip after that point or at that point, because there may be other reasons a driver is unable to take a passenger, but it does remind them when they attempt to cancel that, in fact, it is a requirement to take a passenger with an assistance dog. So they get an extra reminder at that point. If they still cancel, the passenger or the rider, as we quaintly call passengers, will then be notified and asked whether there are any issues with their pickup that they'd like to discuss with Uber. And that's when they get a kind of priority customer support. And to be absolutely frank, that is to establish whether there are any concerns about a driver's compliance with the regulation, which is that you, of course, must take a passenger who has an assistance dog.
Have you had any feedback from people who have used this feature?
I have had a number of messages in from passengers who do travel with assistance dogs, actually saying that they massively welcome this innovation. But, you know, it's very, very early days. But, we'd really welcome feedback because it's incredibly important to us that that passengers with assistance dogs really should experience no issues whatsoever with Uber or, frankly, any other private hire driver taking their assistance dog.
Yes, for me, having an assistance dog myself, I think it's a great feature because, you know, it saves you having to message every single driver while they are on their way going, I have a guide dog. It takes away that awkward task because, well, it's there already.
And there should be no need for you to do that. And so not only do we automate it, but we do want to continually remind drivers of their obligations. I mean, it is something that, first of all, to be a private hire driver anywhere in the United Kingdom, you need to know your obligations. And one of the obligations is to carry passengers with assistance dogs. But that is also an obligation of driving on the Uber platform. So we are looking for opportunities to remind drivers of that, you know, very, very clear obligation. And look, you know, there is, as I'm sure you appreciate, an important distinction between an assistance dog under the Equality Act and a pet. And a pet's a pet, an assistance dog is an assistance dog, and they need to be carried, no questions asked and at no extra charge.
Fantastic. Well, we are certainly hoping that it will make experiences much easier for riders out there, and certainly has for me. If people would like to contact you to provide accessibility feedback or feedback of any kind, what's the best way to go about it?
Within the app, there are features that allow you to contact customer support, and that is the easiest way. And we are always looking for particularly on the topic of accessibility, that is a very particularly important and sensitive topic. So we will be looking out for any feedback or complaints in that area.
Andrew Brehm, General Manager for Uber in the UK, thank you very much for coming on to tell us about the new assistance/service animal feature in the Uber app here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me. Lovely to meet you, Hubert.
I'm sitting with a DotPad X on my lap. It is a rectangular shaped device. It's bigger than an iPad, bigger than a standard iPad anyway. And some people have said to me it's a bit
like an iPad Pro or an iPad Air, but it is actually a bit thicker than that. But it's not too heavy. It's certainly something you can carry in your bag. Now, what is a DotPad X? It is a multi-line braille display and tactile graphics display. If I give you a quick tour, it's rectangular in shape, and on the top, in the center, is a rectangular area where the dots of your braille would come up, or any drawings or diagrams or anything that you've been doing with the dot pad that would come up on the flat surface in the middle. It's surrounded by like a picture frame, so you have a rectangular circumference with an area in the middle where you would get 20 cells per line of 8 lines of braille, or you would have an area if you wanted to use a diagram, study a spreadsheet or a map or whatever it is you want to do, or even if you're going to draw, that is the area where all the braille would come up. At the bottom of the front face of the DotPad X are some keys, left and right arrow keys. They are for panning, and the four inner keys, they're very nicely spaced out and they're very tactile along the front just below the rectangular area where the braille comes up. And then closest to you, which would be closest to me, is a single line of 20 cells where you could just have the single line coming up instead of using the middle area. It depends what you're doing and what scenario you're using with the dot pad, but it's very flexible. On the left-hand side, you have a USB-C port, and you would plug in a cable there and connect that to your computer. Or if you went to use your Mac, you could do that as well. On the right-hand side is another USB-C port, and that's for your charging port. And below that is an on-off switch. You push it away from you to turn it on. You push it towards you to turn it off. But trust me, it's instant. You don't have to wait for this to warm up or anything. You just turn it on and you're ready to go. You have to pair your iPad or your iPhone using Bluetooth. And that is a pretty straightforward process. It's just done in the standard way. It is really, really responsive once you use VoiceOver to read your lines of Braille. I've particularly found it brilliant for reading Kindle books because I've paired it with my iPad mini. I go into Kindle, I choose a book from my library, and then I just start reading on the DotPad X. 8 lines of 20 cells of Braille. They're beautifully spaced out, and the panning keys on the device allow you to move left and right and turn your pages. You don't have to touch your iPad at all once you've got the dot pad turned on, because your control keys on the iPad are just ignored and you just use your DotPad X. And what I tend to do is mute the speech on the iPad. I just double tap with 3 fingers to mute speech, and that way it's really easy just to listen to. Instead of listening to the synthetic speech, then I can just read with Braille, and it's lovely. In the box, you get the DotPad X and you get a lovely soft bag, and the bag will house your, not only your DotPad X, but it also houses an iPad or, you know, your phone, and you can put your cables in the zip compartments as well. So there's plenty of room. It's very carryable, very portable, or you could put it in your backpack, of course, if you prefer. On the underside of the DotPad X, you've got 4 feet, so it does sit nicely on a table. It also comes in the box with a plastic backing, so you can put it into like a tray. It's a bit like the back of an iPhone case where your screen is exposed, but the back of it is sitting in a plastic tray, and it gives it a little bit of protection around the edges. So that comes in the box with the charging cable and some membranes. They are replaceable. You can use the tool that comes with it to take the membranes off and change them. This is to protect all the dots on the DotPad X. So it is well protected, but you can change the membrane if you'd rather have somebody sighted do it, then fair enough. But there is a tool in the box that lets you change it. And it's just to protect the dots, really, and all the electronics going on underneath. But it doesn't detract from what you feel. It's a really, for me anyway, and I know this is subjective, but it really does feel lovely to read the Braille under my fingers. It's not hard. It's not harsh. It isn't signage Braille either. You know, they are really nice dots. They're actually very, very similar to the Monarch, if anybody's ever used a Monarch or tried one. So with DotPadX, the other thing that you can do is download an app from the App Store, which is free of charge. It's called DotCanvas. And you can create an account and you can actually pair your DotPadX with DotCanvas, and it gives you the ability to draw, sketch, make diagrams, do anything that you want to do with your fingers or an Apple Pencil on your iPad or your iPhone. And then when it's paired to DotCanvas, you can save your drawings or your masterpieces, and you can put them in the cloud if you want to. And anything that you draw on your iPad in DotCanvas comes up on the DotPadX surface. It's really clever. The Monarch has something similar called WingIt. You can do that on that as well. But at this stage, at the time of reviewing the DotPadX, the Monarch doesn't enable you to use iOS at the moment. That is in beta, and I'm not using a beta version. So at this stage, it doesn't work with iOS, whereas DotPad does. And I think it's so responsive as well. When you turn DotPad on and you want to use it with either JAWS, NVDA, your Mac, or your iOS device, it is incredibly responsive. There's no lag. I think it really is coming on at a huge leap. Multi-line Braille is the future, but I do appreciate that it is very expensive. You know, it's just not feasible for a lot of people to access it. And that is, you know, the sad thing. But we'd like to think in time that it will become more available. It's certainly going to be a major step forward in education in terms of working with pupils who have a visual impairment, because if they want to do GCSE math, for example, or they need to do a scientific exam, or, you know, just anything really, working with spreadsheets and tables, it's brilliant. But as I say, there is a cost, and the cost is £6,495, which, you know, to most people is an incredibly considered purchase. You purchase it from VisionAid Technologies, so you can get in touch with them, a company in Spalding in Lincolnshire. Their phone number is 0800 002 5555.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Let's catch up with the inbox then. We've had an email from Mike. I'm going to do this one in two parts because he asks a couple of questions. He says, "Hi team. I'm currently learning Spanish on the Duolingo app, but I'm now struggling to see everything. Do any of you know of any accessible language learning apps?" I'm not too sure on this one. Anything from you guys? I mean, I struggle with English, to be honest. I don't know another language.
No comment, Callum. Hi, Mike. Not sure if that can be too much help, because it sounds like you're using Zoom and Magnification and I use VoiceOver. But when I was studying languages at school, I downloaded various apps and they worked with varying degrees of success, as you can imagine. But I found a nice little series of apps actually called whatever it was, Light. So French Light, Spanish Light, Italian Light. And they were free apps because I wasn't going to fork out for an app that might not work. And it had different categories. So could be home and family, food and drink, directions, that kind of thing. And then within it had different games and learning lists. And some of them were accessible and some of them weren't. But at least the actual core content was accessible and I could access enough of the activities to find it useful. Another app I used was, and actually still use when abroad, is MLD. So that's Mike Lambda Delta. Don't ask me what it stands for. And it is a translated app, again, free. And quite simply, you'd put in the word in English and it'd pop out in whatever language you'd chosen it to translate into. And you could swap it around and do vice versa. I'm not sure if that's as good as Duolingo, but like I say, I found them good. I found them helpful. And I have to say, I just kind of went on a scattergun approach where I downloaded lots of different apps and found out which one worked for me at the time until they updated and they all changed around, a bit like a Mad Hatter's tea party. But yeah, give those a go. Like I say, these were all free. I wasn't going to pay for them. And let us know how you get on.
Hope that helps, Mike. Not really an area that we're particularly experienced with, I don't think, or certainly I'm not. But if any of you guys out there have got any suggestions, then do get in touch and let us know as well. The second part of Mike's email, he says, I'm also thinking of learning Braille. Any tips for beginners? Jackie, I feel like this is one for you.
Okay, so Mike, there is plenty of material out there. Some of it, I think, even free, and some of it obviously paid for. Your best place probably to start is on the RNIB website. If you put in something like learning Braille, there is plenty around on RNIB, both on the shop and on the website, that you could find out a bit more about. And the other place I would recommend that you go to, and they do sort of masterclasses on this learning Braille, is the Braillists website. So if you go to braillist.org, they are sure to have tips, and they do have a sort of a almost weekly session on learning Braille. There is plenty out there. So even if you do a sort of a good Google search, something like learning Braille or learning Braille tips, I'm sure you'll get lots of results. But certainly RNIB and the Braillists both have extensive Braille learning material. So and as I say, some of it is free. So give that a go.
The only thing I would wonder about with doing these things online is, whilst you can learn the Braille code online, I'm sure, with various resources, I think if you actually want to become a proficient user of Braille, you're probably going to, well, you need to feel it, but you're also probably going to need a qualified instructor to teach you actually how to read it, because it's a proper skill. And I think a lot of these resources are geared up for sighted people who want to help blind or visually impaired colleagues, or you know, parents wanting to read their children's books or that kind of thing. So they need to be able to read it visually, but they don't need to be able to feel it and track it with their fingers, and there is a skill to that. So by all means, use these resources to get you started, but if you're hoping to switch out from magnification to reading Braille fluently, you might want to seek out an instructor, at least for a couple of lessons.
Yeah, I have always wondered that with these online resources, because I mean, I learned Braille at school, but I don't know if getting a Braille, like getting a Perkins or getting a Braille labeler, could be a bit of an in-between. Like, once you know the dot combinations, you could then write them out, and then you could maybe get scripts with, oh, okay, so that's what that feels like. But if you can get a Braille instructor, at least for one or two lessons, that would be good. I don't know if you're on Facebook, Mike, but there is a Braille support group on Facebook. It's literally just called Braille Support Group, and you get a lot of questions in there, you know, people clarifying what they're learning, and you might even find a Braille instructor there in your area. So I don't know if you're on there, but if you are, that might be worth a look as well, because there is some good advice on there as well. So I hope that helps. Muhammad has also been in touch. He's got a question for me. He says, Callum, I'd like to know what voiceover voice you use when giving demonstrations. The voice you use is amazing. I know it's a female voice, but which one? I do like that voice. So that is the British Siri Voice 3 voice. I don't think the Siri voices have names, do they? But if you go to the Siri section under the British English, it's Voice 3 that one is. I think it's from iOS 18 that you get that. So if you're on iOS 18 or 26, you should be able to find that voice. Yeah, it's It is a really nice voice. It's nice for demos. I use that for reading as well. If I just want to sit back and read quite a long web page or article or something, it is very nice and a little bit northern. So, you know, if you've got any questions or if you've got any tips on the ones that have come in, if you've got any advice for Mike there on language learning apps or Braille or anything else you want to share, we'd love to hear it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. A couple of weeks ago, I gave a description and initial overview of the Orbit Player from Orbit Research. And in this demo, I want to show you how you can go about accessing books and documents on there. Because although this device does do other stuff, it's got a voice recorder and calendar and contacts app and all that kind of thing. The main use case of this is a book and media player. So chances are that's going to be what you'll want to use it for. So it supports all the usual file formats that you would expect in terms of both documents and audio files. So text files, PDF, docs, EPUB, DAISY audio is supported, MP3, M4A, all the common ones that you would expect. You can get files onto this by either using an SD card, so putting the files onto an SD card and then putting them into the player, or you can connect the Orbit Player directly to your computer and put files on it that way, either to the SD card that's already inserted in there or just to the internal storage. And there's a pretty generous amount of storage on there, as I mentioned before. So let's have a quick look at the book reader app, what it looks like at the minute, and then we'll go through how you navigate through files, how you read them, and I will add a DAISY book onto this as well, and we'll see how that looks. So I'm going to wake my Orbit Player up from standby mode just by pressing the power button on the right-hand side.
Home, book reader, 1-9.
And we're on the home screen, and the first app that we come to is the book reader. So I'll press OK.
Categories list, my bookshelf selected.
So the first option you've got is my bookshelf, and that, as the name suggests, is where all your books are.
Online services.
I'm just using the down arrow to navigate through these. We've got online services.
Newspapers.
Newspapers, so it does support some newspaper services. I believe NFB Newsline is supported for now.
Downloaded books.
Downloaded books. So this is, if you are using an online service and you've downloaded books from there, that is where they would appear, as well as on your bookshelf if you've started reading them.
Recently read.
Recently read. So again, similar to the bookshelf, but rather than a big list of all your books, it will be a few of the most recent ones that you've read or listened to.
My bookshelf.
And then we're back round to my bookshelf. So if we have a look at online services.
Online services. Online services list. Project Gutenberg, 1-1.
So Project Gutenberg was already in here. I've never used Project Gutenberg, but it was one of the ones that was already added. There are a few others available as well. Not many UK ones, sadly, but I'll just quickly show you how to find them in case they do become available in future. So I've gone into online services, and the first option there was Project Gutenberg. But if we press the menu key, which is, as I mentioned on the initial kind of overview demo, you've got your arrow keys. So you've got your up, down, left and right, and the select in the middle. And then at either side of those keys, there are four buttons. So one at the top, one at the bottom left, and one at the top and one at the bottom right. The menu button is the top left of that row. So press menu.
Context menu, add online service.
So we've got add online service. If we press OK on that.
Add online service dialog, online services, list, Sugama Pastakalia, 1-4.
And then these are all the options that are supported. So there's four options. There's that one.
Project Gutenberg, 2 of 4.
Project Gutenberg, as we saw before.
Bookshare, 3 of 4.
Bookshare is on there.
App 3715, Rue, 4 of 4.
So they're the ones that are available. We've got Project Gutenberg, Bookshare, and then I'm not even going to try and pronounce the other two that were there. So they're the ones that are available at the moment. So no support for RNIB reading services, or at least not yet. But Orbit Research did indicate in their interview that more services would be coming. But as of this recording, which is December 2025, these are the only ones that are available. So we'll press the back button to get out of this, which is the bottom right of that row around the arrow keys.
Online services list, Project Gutenberg, 1-1.
And then we'll press back again just to get out of this.
Categories list, online services selected.
So let's go to my bookshelf, because there are a couple of files on here that were already on here when I got the device. So we'll go into my bookshelf.
My bookshelf, books list, or 40 user guide, docs, 1 of 3.
So the Orbit 40 user guide was on here for some reason, not entirely sure why. I guess these are just loaded up as kind of sample documents. And as you heard there, that was a docs file. So obviously that doesn't support audio. So what it will do is the player itself will read that out to you. And you can have a different voice for menus than you can for content. So you'll see that in a second. I'll just go through and show you what else is in here.
Orbit Player User Guide V0.4, docs, 2 of 3.
So you've got the Player User Guide.
User Guide, docs, 3 of 3.
And then another file for the User Guide. I'm not sure what the difference is, whether one of them is a newer version. So if we go to the User Guide, I'll press OK on this, and then you'll see how the player handles reading documents that don't support audio. So I'll press OK.
Please wait.
Loading it up. You get those little beeps.
Orbit Research logo featuring a stylized glove.
Pause.
I'm just going to press the OK button to pause that for a second. But you get those little beeps to let you know that it's loading. This is quite a chunky document, I guess you could say. So it took a few seconds there just to load it in. And then it started reading it. So just to save confusion, I've got the Serena voice reading out as my main voice, and then Daniel reading out document content. So if I press play now, or the OK key.
Play.
Orbit Research logo featuring a stylized globe with intersecting lines representing latitude and longitude. The globe is positioned within an elliptical orbit, with the word orbit in bold capital letters beside the globe and research in smaller capital.
Pause.
So I'll just press the OK button again to pause that. So as you can hear there, it's reading out the description of the Orbit logo, which is at the top of the document. To navigate through this, you can use the up and down arrow to find the different navigation options available. Very similar to the media player when we were playing the audio version of the user guide in the last demo. So I'll press the down arrow.
Time, 15 seconds. Time, 1 minute. Time, 2 minute. Time, 5 minute. Time, 10 minutes. Word.
So then these are, so you can navigate by word.
Sentence.
Sentence.
Page. Heading level 1. Heading level 2. Heading level 3.
Now these are really interesting ones, especially for things like the user guide. So you can navigate by headings. So if we go to heading level 1.
Heading level 1.
If we press the right arrow now.
Introduction and orientation.
So that's one of the headings. If we press right again.
Quick start. File manager.
And if we press left arrow.
Quick start.
We'll go back through the headings. So we're on quick start at the minute. So now if I press the play button again.
Play.
Quick start. Conventions in this user guide. For consistency and clarity, the following conventions are used in this user.
Pause.
So then it's reading it from that heading. Now, a tip that I will give you, if you want to navigate through these, and we could carry on using the left and right arrow to go through those. Same with heading 2, heading 3, page, word, all that. They all work the same way. So once you've used your up and down arrow keys, found the option you want, you can just press the right or left arrow to go through those. But if you're trying to navigate through these, I would recommend pausing the playback before you try to navigate. So if I press play now.
Play.
For consistency and clarity.
It's reading it. And now if I try and use the left arrow to go back.
The keys on the number.
So I just press the left arrow then to go back a heading. But, so I'm pressing the left and right arrows, and it's not doing anything. So I need to pause the reading before navigating through, because otherwise it seems to confuse it a little bit. So I've pressed the right arrow a couple of times now, but if I press pause,
pause,
and then I press play again,
play,
online libraries, introduction, the online,
pause.
So it has moved, but it's just not said anything. So if you want to navigate, then I would say, if you want to navigate by headings or page, at least for time, it seems to work okay. But if you want to navigate by anything else, then I would suggest pause it, use the arrow keys until you get to the bit that you want, and then press play to start it from there. I don't know if that's a bug or if that's intentional, but that's how it works at the minute. So we'll press back to come out of this.
Books list, user guide, docs, 3 of 3.
And then these are the only three that we've got on here for now. So just these three docs files. But PDFs and all those sorts of files are handled exactly the same way. Of course, how accessible the document is going to be and how well it's going to read it is going to depend on the document itself and how that's been written. But as long as it's an accessible document, then it should be able to be read on this. So we'll now add a book to this and we'll see how that works. So just to keep things tidy, I'm going to go out of the book reader by pressing the home key.
Home, book reader, 1 of 9.
And now let's put the Orbit player into standby for a minute. Now I'm going to jump over to my computer, and I've already downloaded a book from Reading Services, because even though Reading Services isn't supported directly on the player, you can, of course, still access your books from there by downloading them and then putting them onto an SD card or putting them onto the player itself, as I said before. So I've downloaded a book from Reading Services, and that's now appeared in my downloads folder, which I'm going to jump over to.
WR, downloads, and one more tab, dash, file explorer, download.
So there's my downloads folder. And if we arrow through this, we should find the book that I've downloaded.
Today expanded the underline hunger underline games underline reading underline services.
So I've downloaded the Hunger Games book, and as you'll know if you've downloaded stuff from Reading Services before, so this is a DAISY audiobook, and it downloads it as a zip file. So you extract the zip file, you've got a folder then with all the individual files that make up the DAISY recording, and usually on some of these players you have to extract that zip file and then copy the folder over. Whereas what you can do with the Orbit Player, which is kind of nice, is that you can just drop in the zipped archive and it will handle it. So there's the Hunger Games zip file. I'm just going to do Control C to copy that. It hasn't said anything just because of how I've got my jaws set up, but that should have copied over. And now I'm going to navigate to, I've already got my Orbit Player connected to my laptop. I don't have an SD card in here, so I'm just going to use the internal storage. So I'm going to navigate to that folder.
Items view multi-select list box, internal shared storage, 35%, 50.
So there's the initial, so the Orbit Player has basically appeared on my laptop as a drive. And then because I've no SD card or anything in here, the only option we've got is internal storage. So let's press enter on that.
Explorer pane, unavailable, internal shared storage, items view multi-select list box, not select.
Now we've got a few folders in here. I'm just going to press B to get to the books folder.
Books.
So then press enter on that.
Explorer pane, unavailable, books.
Now within this folder, there is a file, a folder called DAISY files.
Doc files, DAISY files.
So we'll press enter on that.
Explorer pane, unavailable, DAISY files, items view multi-select list box, working on the dot dot dot, items view multi-select list box, this folder is empty.
So as we can hear at the minute, that folder is currently empty. So I already copied that zip folder, that zip file rather, with the Hunger Games in, so I'll just do Control V to paste that in here.
Copying dot 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 dialog.
It's quite a big file, so we'll just give that a couple of minutes to copy over. While it does that, oh, there we go, it's done. I was going to say, while it does that, if you don't have to follow this structure of putting things into the books folder and then into DAISY files or doc files or text files, wherever you want to put it, it doesn't necessarily have to be structured like that. The only reason I've done it that way is just because if they're in those particular folders, they will appear automatically on the bookshelf. Whereas if they're not, so you can put them wherever you want, but what you would have to do then is if you go to the bookshelf, on the context menu, there's an option to manually import files. So if you were to put them outside of these folders, it's fine, it will still work. It just won't initially show up on the bookshelf, so then you'll have to manually import it and just tell it where that file is, and then it will bring it in and put it on the bookshelf for you. But just to make life easier, I've just put it directly in the folders. So I'm going to come out of this.
Alt+F4, Orbit Player Part 2 Book Reader.
So now we can unplug the Orbit Player from my laptop.
Home, Book Reader 1-9.
Now that's already woken itself up and we're on Book Reader. So again, press OK on that.
Categories List, My Bookshelf Selected.
Bookshelf.
Books List, All 40 User Guide, Docs 1-4.
So now we can hear that's increased. We've got four items in here now. So arrow down to go through these.
Orbit Player User Guide, Docs, The Hunger Games Reading Services User 128,229 Daisy 2 Audio, Zip, 4 of 4.
And then there it is, The Hunger Games book is there. So we'll press OK on this, it will load it in, and it should start playing.
Confirm dialog, the selected book exceeds 200 megabytes and may take some time to load. Would you like to proceed? OK button.
So that's basically just saying it could take a while to load it in because it's quite a big book, but that's fine. So we'll press OK.
Please wait.
You get these little beeps.
The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. This book is produced by RNIB.
There it is.
RNIB. Pause.
So pause that. And you can navigate through this book all the same way that you would with your documents. So you can go in various time increments. You can go by the different levels. You can also adjust the playback speed as well. So to make things easier, I'm just going to do the up arrow rather than going through all of the different options.
Playback speed.
Playback speed. And then again, you can use your left and right arrow. This goes up in pretty small increments, which if you really like having a lot of control over your playback speed rather than just, you know, 1.5 or 2 or 2.5, you've got quite a bit of control here.
Playback speed, 6. Playback speed, 7.
RNIB, supporting blind and partially sighted people.
Playback speed, 8.
Read by Julie Rogers. It lasts 10 hours and 30 minutes.
Playback speed, 9.
Here is a brief description of the book. In a future North America, where the ruler...
Pause.
So that's obviously playing quite fast. And then I can do the left arrow key to go the other way.
Okay. Playback speed, 6.
America.
Playback speed, 5.
I think that was the default.
Where the rulers of Panem maintain control through an annual televised survival competition, pitting young people from...
Pause.
And there we go. So that's playing that book. If we put the device into sleep mode and then wake it up, it should remember where we were as well.
Book reader dialogue.
Then we just press OK to start playing.
Pitting young people from each of the 12 districts against one another.
Pause.
Obviously, we weren't very far in there, but you could see that it had remembered it. So all the features you would expect from one of these players, really. Because this is an RNIB show, I've been focusing kind of heavily on reading services here, because it'd be rude not to. But this obviously applies to anywhere that you can get your books or your files. As long as it's in one of the supported formats, you can just download it, copy it over to the player, and off you go. And as well as the mainstream formats, this does also now support BRF and BRL files as of the latest firmware update. So even if something, again, just going back to reading services, if a book that you want to read isn't available in audio, but it is available in Braille format, you can download that, copy it over to your player, and then open it in the Braille Reader app, and it will read it to you using your content voice, the same way that you saw with the docs file earlier. The only thing you want to bear in mind with that is just to, before you start reading, or if you start reading and you're getting weird results, go into the settings, go to Braille settings, and just make sure your Braille table is set correctly. on the player. And that's a global setting, so you can't set that per file. That's a global setting throughout the player. So if you've got a couple of different files that are different Braille tables for whatever reason, then you would have to go into settings, switch to the relevant one, and then you can open up that file and it will read properly. So if you've got the Orbit Player, or if you're thinking of getting it, that is how you can access your books. And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much for tuning in and being with us. If you want to get in touch, you're more than welcome to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send a written email or attach a voice message and we will play that out on air if you want us to. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week. Thank you.